Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
We kick it into another hour here. It's great to have you with us. Phil Bork on the show tomorrow. Talk about the Penguins Stanley Cup. We'll talk with him. I'm looking forward to it. That'll be a lot of fun. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. The Mets are playing the Cubs last night. Curtis Granderson at the plate. Howie Rose at the mic.
Breaking ball hit deep to right field. Down the line. Near the pole. Gone. Home run. Curtis Granderson. Takes Carl Edwards Jr. deep into the lower right field stands. For Granderson, it is his 300th Major League home run, and it gives the Mets a 5-4 lead here in the bottom of the eighth inning. Congratulations on the milestone, Curtis Granderson.
Great moment for him, great moment for the Mets last night at Citi Field. Baseball tonight, the Phillies are in action. They'll take on the Red Sox. And they get to see Chris Sale tonight. Yeah, you never know. You know me, I always talk about each game being an individual entity. The problem is, in certain areas, you do see patterns. And, you know, if you're a Philly fan, you can't like the pattern. You can't. This is not. When I sit there and I look at the Phillies, I thought they were going to be a 75-win team. Now, they may still end up being a 75-win team. But you've got to show some signs you're going that way, don't you? And I don't see it yet. I mean, you can't rush this. But I'll tell you what does not help the Phillies' organizational cause, and that's the Houston Astros. Look what the Houston Astros have done in what appears to be a relatively short period of time. That's the issue. You look at the development of all these young players that the Astros have, that they've come through either their system or they've traded and then worked their way through their system. And you see what they've been able to accomplish. They have had a great run. Now, this is the third straight year of the great run. And it is, and that's the problem you have. And it's going to be the problem for any young team. I mean, look at the, I'll give you another one. The Minnesota Twins. The Minnesota Twins, they may not make the playoffs, but right now they're in first place. They have a record of 34-29. Now, the irony is they actually play better on the road than they do at home. The Twins are 20-9 on the road. But at least through June 15th, a team that was mired at the bottom now makes everyone get excited because now they're in first place. Now, whether they stay there or not, but at least they're giving their fans hope that they're headed in the right direction. See my point? Look at the Astros, 45-22. This is an incredible run for them. But you look at their roster, okay? Their roster, okay, it's one really good young player after another. I mean, they have a couple guys on the pitching staff that are over 30. Michael Fiers, who threw the no-hitter a couple of years ago, he's one. Luke Gregerson, who, by the way, started his career here at State College, so we know Luke. Will Harris, Jamie Hoyt. Everybody else is in their 20s. That's what they have. That's the you know, a young pitching staff. You go behind the plate. They got experience behind the plate in both Evan Gattis and Brian McCann. Okay, they've got that. But then look at their infield. Hey, Correa's 22. Bergman's 23. Altuve is the old man at 27. You go to the outfield. Derek Fisher, who I just saw Derek against State College a couple of years ago. 23. And I'm talking just 2 years ago he was there. George Springer's 27. Jake Marisnick is 26. Marwin Gonzalez is 28. I mean, that's their outfield. Now, their DH is called Beltran, who is Sean's age. And they're disabled. I mean, they've got guys on the disabled list that can play. I mean, Josh Reddick can play. He's only 30. He's on the DL. Dallas Keuchel's on the DL. He's 29. Lance McCullers is 23. He's on the DL. And they're still winning games. They're still winning games. I mean, that's the problem you have. When you look at the Astros roster, and so many of these guys, I mean, Derek Fisher was a great player at Tri-City. You could see it. Correa. A couple of guys on the mound. Michael Feliz. Michael Feliz pinching in the championship series against State College in 2013. I mean, that's what they have. I mean, they brought these guys through their system. And the problem is they're there now. The Phillies aren't there yet. That's the problem. And I think when you see a young team using essentially the same model you're using, it does two things. It does give you hope you can get there. So that's fair. But at the same time, you're jealous because they're already there and you're still trying to see if there's any there for you.
Yeah, you brought up the point last hour. Yeah, they could use one or two more vets on the team to help the young guys, you know, help them lead the way and, you know, do what they can do to build their numbers up. But I think another frustrating part of it, too, is Jeremy Hellickson. He didn't do all that badly last year, and he's due $17 million for this year alone, and he's only getting about four strikeouts a game.
But you know what? If he's a Philly after July 31st, I'm going to be shocked. Wouldn't you be?
So could that be the ideal time to then maybe bring in a veteran player and not wait till the postseason?
No, but a guy like Hellickson, you can trade and get some prospects for him. When I'm talking about veteran players, I'm talking about free agency the offseason. I'm not talking about anything they can do during the season, Sean. There's nothing they can do in season that's going to change the dynamic of the team that you currently have.
So ship Hellickson and you guaranteed at least minimum two back in return.
Right. Get prospects for him. Do it. Then in the offseason, sign two veterans to go with the guys you have. Franco's only 27. Franco's 24. Galvis is 27. Tommy Joseph, for all this, is only 25, you know. Ty Kelly's an old rookie at 28. Knapp, you know how much I like Knapp offensively. I mean, defensively, Knapp is okay, but offensively, I like Knapp a lot. He's only 25. Rupp's 28. Let's just look at the everyday players here. I mean, Blanco's 33. I mean, he's, you know, that's... Altier's 26. Herrera's 25. Howie Kendrick's 33. But Kendrick... You know, it's been fine. Navas 34, Saunders is 30. And your disabled list includes Hernandez, Velasquez, and of course Clay Buchholz, who's not coming back. But you look down now in the minors. What do you have in the minors? Alfaro's not doing bad. He's 24. Anderson, 23. Mark Appel, ERA 5.5. He's 25 now. Dylan Cousins, good bat from the left side. Cousins, big man, can play first base, can play right field. He's 23. Zach Efron's 23. Mark Leiter Jr. is 26. Ricardo Pinto's 23. Roman Quinn, who's out 6 weeks with another injury, still only 24. Brock Stassi. Okay, good left-handed bat. But, you know, Brock Stassi's not a young guy. He's 27. Jake Thompson's 23, but the ERA's over 6. Nick Williams is 23. And what's Crawford now, 21? Is Crawford 21 now? Might be. And he's only hitting 194. I mean, that's the problem. I mean, they're already playing a lot of young people to begin with. I like what Ben Lively did the other night. Did you watch his performance? I thought he was good. I thought he was really good. But, you know, you look at their staff. Neshek's 36. Fine is 33. Joaquin Benoit's 39. He's on his 53rd team. Garcia's 30. Helixson's 30. See, that's why I think July 31 is a prime time to trade Jeremy Helixson. Prime time. He's a veteran. He's been through it. 7-year guy. I mean, that's why I think it's prime to move him.
J.P. Crawford, 22.
22 years old.
Okay. Right. Cousin of Carl Crawford. I did not know that.
Yes. Very good. And you're talking, a guy like Helixson's gone 7 years. And that guy has a career ERA under 4. He's pitched in the postseason. So that's what, I mean, that's why, to me, when you are looking at, can you move somebody that can help the organization in the end, he is one of them that you can look and think you can get some return. Because the Phillies have done a good job of identifying prospects they can get. Now, Helixson struggling does not help this story at all. And you're right, he makes $17.2 million. But what he's done this year has not helped. I kind of felt last year was the time to move him. He went 12-10 last year. ERA was under 4. I mean, I really think there was the time to move him was last year. And this year, he's given up 79 hits in 77 innings. See, last year he was on the plus side of that. He gave up 173 hits in 189 innings. Now he's back to what he did before when he was with Arizona. He's giving up more hits than innings pitched. And Arizona had more innings than he had more hits than innings pitched. Same thing as last couple of years in Tampa Bay. But it's not as, you know, but a contending team will want him. Why would a contending team want him? Because at least he's gone out and he's pitched in the postseason before. Hasn't had awesome success, but he's at least pitched in the postseason. So you're talking about a guy that's at least been around the block. He's a guy you can get something for, and he's not doing enough for you to keep. Now, John Kruk did praise him because they feel that the Philly starting pitchers can benefit from being around a guy like that. All right, so I want to give credit where credit's due. If John feels that way, he's around it every day. So I'm not going to sit here and dispute that. But is he worth keeping? Is he worth keeping? I don't know. Gave up 24 home runs last year. He's already given up 15 this year. He's already given up 15 home runs this year. And his strikeout-to-walk ratio, this is a real problem. He was a 3-1 strikeout-to-walk guy last year. This year he's got 34 strikeouts and 23 walks. I mean, last year for the season, he didn't quite average a strikeout per inning. In fact, he was 189 innings, 154 strikeouts. So that's a, what, a minus 35? Okay, well, right now, guess what? He's a minus 43 on this season. 77 innings and 34 strikeouts. Where's that gone? Where has that gone? All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more whining, moaning, and complaining in a moment, as only we can do it on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now you've also watched the Kansas City Royals succeed with a youth movement formula. I don't know. Tough times in Philly. This is a much tougher slog than I thought it would be. What are they, 21 and I want to say 43, 44? Does that sound right?
21 and 43.
Yeah. I mean, honestly.
You're right. Quite a few did have some, I mean, not lofty, but very positive expectations when they were going through training camp.
Let me put it this way. I figured at this point, okay, let's, so they, what, 21 and 43, right? 64 games. I thought they'd maybe be 30 and 34 or 29 and 35 right now. I mean, is that unrealistic? I don't think that's unrealistic. I don't think it's unrealistic at all.
Oh, I would think for sure. I could think of at least five or six games where, you know, they either blew a lead or, you know, right, either up 4-0 and just, you know,
bullpen's been a huge issue. Yeah. I mean, and look, this is not a Pete McCann issue.
Zero, zip, zilch.
This is not a Pete McCann issue.
Not at all. They've got the right guy at the right spot at the right time.
So that's not the problem. But for whatever reason, these guys either have stalled in development, maybe a couple have lost confidence, I don't know. But at the moment, they're not good enough. Doesn't mean they can't develop into being good enough, but at the moment, they're not good enough. And that's, take your hard-earned money, you want to spend it on, you know, look, I mean, going to the ballpark's always going to be fun. It's always going to be fun. You go out there, it's a warm day, warm evening, you get yourself a beverage, you get yourself some ice cream, you get yourself some sloppy food to eat, whatever, or, you know, these days you have even healthier food choices even at the ballpark. And just enjoy it. And then, I mean, and people still do that. But it's not as if you're going out and you're paying for a $5 bleacher seat. You are still paying a pretty good dime to get yourself to park the, you know, to park the car, to buy the tickets, and then the food isn't exactly off the value menu at Wendy's. I mean, to get a night out there, you want to take your son or daughter with you, or you want to take your wife and a couple of children with you to go to the game. It's going to end up being a night that, where it's going to cost you some bucks. So you would like to see a product worthy of the money you're spending. To the credit of the Philadelphia fans, they seem to understand what they're saying. They seem to understand that, you know, that they're going with the youth movement. They seem to understand what this is all about. So they've been great about that. Philly fans have been great about it. But when John Crux said, "I'd just like to see a win," I'll be honest, that's one of those moments on the show where it took me aback a bit, where I thought, wow, they're further away than I thought they were. If that's the current attitude, wow. Timing means a lot in these things. I mean, the Red Sox are playing a little bit better baseball right now. And let's flip it around. They're also hitting the Phillies at a time where they aren't playing well. I mean, they've lost 8 games in a row. Well, That'll be at, 6:30 tonight? Phil's and Red Sox pregame. They have L.A. and Scott Fransky sound better than ever. I think they've done a great job with these broadcasts. We're home of the Phillies News Radio 1070 WKOK. Let's see if they can get things kicked into another gear tonight. Final half hour. Suit stories. No, just kidding. Well, actually, something more interesting than that. How about those uniforms for Penn State September 30th?
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us today. Phil Bork on the show tomorrow. Time now for our Sports Bozo of the Day. Thursday, ESPN First Take co-host Max Kellerman shared his reaction to Seattle Seahawks defensive lineman Michael Bennett, comparing free agent quarterback Colin Kaepernick to Muhammad Ali. Kellerman did say the two athletes are very different, but he said the two are similar in that neither went out looking for a protest. The ESPN personality then argued that Kaepernick did not inject politics into the NFL, but rather the NFL injects politics by playing the national anthem and putting pressure on people to stand. Now, again, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. That's what, again, in this country, we are entitled to deliver our opinions. That doesn't mean we have to agree with the other person's opinion. We also don't have to be personal about it either. Here is the transcript as to what he said. They both were asked to do things that were against their conscience. In this country, in the United States of America, you don't have to do that. We are free to make our own choices, and if our conscience is bothering us, we can follow that. In Muhammad Ali's case, he was asked to take a step forward and become part of the Vietnam War, and he was against it on religious and moral and ethical principles, and he refused to take a step, and he faced 5 years of jail time, but was ultimately vindicated by the Supreme Court. Okay. But did he have his prime stripped, his license revoked, and he couldn't earn a living for 4 years? All that. Colin Kaepernick also did not go looking for a protest. It came to him. He was asked to stand for the national anthem. You do not have to stand for the national anthem. And even if it is a rule that you did, is that Colin Kaepernick injecting politics in the NFL? No, that's the NFL injecting politics by playing the national anthem and putting pressure on you to stand for it in the first place. Okay, here's the issue I have with that. There's nothing wrong with Max Kellerman's opinion. That's his opinion as to how he looks at it. But we have freedom of speech in this country, and we have freedom of choice in this country. So in each case, is Colin Kaepernick exercising his freedom of speech and his freedom of choice? Yes and yes on both. There's no question about that. But when you work for a company, they have rules too. They have rules too. So if I go on a profanity-laced rampage on the show, you know, the ones that Sean only hears during the commercial breaks, that's where you back me up. That's the part where you jump in and go, no. But say I go on the air and I go on a profanity-laced tirade against something. And you know the FCC rules are so much looser now on such things. Much looser now. Well, if Roger doesn't like it, Roger doesn't have to keep me. But I exercise my right of free speech. I may deliver an opinion about an athlete or a player or an organization, and it's not going to be complimentary. If Roger doesn't like it, Roger doesn't have to keep me. But I exercise my right of free speech, and I made the choice to do it. But if it doesn't fall within the rules of his company, of which he's the one that's taking the financial risk every single day, then he can get rid of me. Well, what's the difference between that and this? The National Football League says we prefer you to stand up for the national anthem. We're going to play it because this is what we do. And you're defying the company. This goes a lot deeper than it's my right to kneel. Yeah, you have a right to kneel, but guess what? The company has a right to not keep you either if they're not happy with you. Kaepernick has become, I thought this was going to happen too. He has now become a cause and not a quarterback. That some team needs to sign him to show that they back up the cause. And here's the problem with Kaepernick. There's several problems with Kaepernick now as a player. It's not talked often enough about Kaepernick the player. He has not progressed in 3 years, including his last year with Jim Harbaugh. He has not progressed in 3 years. He also has had declining talent around him, but he has not progressed in 3 years. He has not justified the deal of Alex Smith to Kansas City. He hasn't played well enough. Inconsistent. Judgment. For a guy that's very smart, and Colin Kaepernick, is everyone will tell you, he's very, very smart. He makes a lot of mistakes out there. Now, if he goes to a team, he wants to be a starting quarterback. Now, I don't blame him at all because he's been a starting quarterback, and he still feels he's good enough to be one. But if you bring him in with somebody that's already there, do you now cause a problem internally by having them there where he might take the other guy's job? And that creates factions on the team and so forth. So there's plenty of issues. And, you know, NFL teams have the right to hire whomever they wish. If the Seahawks want to go with somebody else, didn't Arizona sign Blake Gabbard? They signed Blake Gabbard, and who signed with Seattle? It was longtime backup. But if they choose not to sign him, I mean, nobody chose to sign Jay Cutler. I mean, it didn't look to me like they were beating Jay Cutler's door down to get to him. And this is where you have to have a real balance in talking about Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick is an employee in the National Football League. And what he did, which is his constitutional right to do. If he wants to kneel down, fine, kneel down. I don't care if he kneels down. I apply my own standard to me. Every game I do, I put my right hand over the heart during the national anthem. My father was a Marine. You know, my father thought I was showing any disrespect in any way. He would be furious. I'm not going to, my father may not be with me, but I'm not going to make him mad. Kaepernick wishes to kneel? Kneel. I was told several Michigan players kneeled during the national anthem of the Penn State-Michigan game. Somebody said, what did you think of it? I said, well, I didn't see it. I said, do I care? And I don't care. Kaepernick's issue here goes beyond. Kaepernick for ESPN has become a cause. And as a sports network, they don't talk enough about him as a football player.
Blaine Gabbert now with Arizona. Seattle depth chart, Russell Wilson, Trevon Boykin, and Austin Davis.
It was Austin Davis who they signed, who had been a brief starter with the Browns. But Kaepernick's problem, now, he had declining talent around him, so I want to understand that. But let's recall the last year Harbaugh was there. Kaepernick did not play well. At some point, you know, this is a performance-based league. If the New Orleans Saints think Adrian Peterson can help them, they sign Adrian Peterson, which they did. And because, again, my problem with how ESPN and how they treat this is they don't do enough talking about the football part, which in the end is the part. Right? I mean, I realize he's got other issues about standing, kneeling, whatever. I don't care what those issues are. I don't care. I think at some point it's got to come down to a football decision. And he has not played well enough to justify a huge contract. He just hasn't. Now, before training camp, there's going to be something that happens, and he will get a contract with somebody. He'll be with somebody. And if he goes out and has and suddenly gets to step into the limelight and have a great year, great for him. I think that's great for him. But don't discount in any way, shape, or form that part of the reason for all this is that he has not performed well. Now, he hasn't had a great team around him the last couple of years, but I keep going back to the last season that he played for Jim Harbaugh. He did not play well. I mean, let me ask you something. How many 4,000-yard seasons has Kaepernick had in his career? None. Now, in 2013, Kaepernick was not just good. He was great. Right? He was at 21 touchdown passes, 8 interceptions. Then he goes to 19 touchdown passes and 10 interceptions. Then he goes 6 touchdown passes and 5 interceptions. Now, last year, his numbers were pretty good. He had 16 touchdowns and 4 interceptions in Chip Kelly's offense. But he still only threw for 2,241 yards. It's all short stuff. He's under 60% for his career passing. He's a great athlete out there. There's no getting around it. Somebody will sign him in training camp once they get an injury to one of their guys. I mean, did you think Michael Vick would ever be a fit for the Pittsburgh Steelers? Now, he wasn't a fit, but they still signed him. Teams will get to a point where they'll want to sign him. But believe me, you talk about what he's done in terms of standing up, down, whatever. But in the end, football does enter into it. I know Harbaugh's big. I mean, big on him. He likes him a lot. Okay. He knows him better than we do. But you can't keep using him as, in my opinion, you can't keep using him as, when you become more of a cause than a player, now you've got a problem. I mean, you going to sign him in Miami when he made pro Fidel Castro comments? I mean, you going to do that? And he's entitled to his opinion, but are you going to sign him in Miami? Now, in defense of Kaepernick, I'll say this. It is a league, as I have pointed out many times, that is thin on really good starting quarterbacks. It's thin. And the Austin Davis signing, the Chase Daniels signing, has people saying, why not him? He has at least started. He has at least had some success in his career, going to two NFC Championship games and a Super Bowl. He can move. There are a lot of pluses he brings to the table as a quarterback. Consistency is not one of them. But when you talk about him, you cannot just sit there and talk about, I can't believe people aren't signing him, because he's more of a cause right now than he is a quarterback. Simple as that. And ESPN treats him like a cause. ESPN treats him like a cause. Always have. Or not always, but I mean, since he started doing that, that's been the big thing. All right, we'll take a break. Like, and believe me, I'm sure he wants to get back in there. And of course, you know, he's an intelligent guy. That everybody tells you how smart he is. I understand all that. But at some point, you've got to be really good at your craft. And he's been good, not great at his craft. But you know what? There are a lot of quarterbacks in this league. We sit back and say, really? The league does not have a depth of really good quarterbacks. At some point, somebody will get hurt. Somebody will take a flyer on him. And we'll see what he can do with it. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Of course, mini camp going on right now, so a chance to talk with the players. And Ryan Shazier says, look, bottom line is the Steelers have to figure out a way to get past the Patriots. So they're a great team. They have a great leader. They just find ways to win. They have good strategy in what they want to do. But I feel we're going to be prepared for them this year. I feel we're going to get them when we need to get them. And at any day, I feel we can win a Super Bowl. We might have had a problem in the past, but I think we're going to be ready this time. He said, everybody's trying to get through that obstacle. Cam Hayward, I think, says it best. He said, we want the goal of being the number one seed. That, it to me, is huge. And the Steeler defense, in the last three games that they have played at Gillette Stadium, they've given up 119 points. That's nearly 40 points a game. In the two games they played at Heinz Field in that span, they've given up 44 points, 22 a game. And I think that's the key part. Can the Steelers have the kind of year that gets them to be the number one seed? You've got to somehow get the Patriots outside of Gillette. The Broncos got to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. They beat the Patriots in the AFC Championship game, in Denver. being at home is not the be-all, end-all. But it doesn't hurt you either. And if you heard already, Rick Pitino gets 5 ACC games. They're going to appeal this. Suspended for the first 5 ACC games. They'll be on probation for 4 years. They also may have to vacate wins, which would include in that time span the 2013 national championship. The NCAA said the school must provide a list of games impacted by the decision. In the history of college basketball, no championship has ever been vacated in men's basketball. Only Final Four appearances have been vacated. There's a lot of this about what the NCAA, what Andre McGee did was awful. But there's also a lot in here that the NCAA did that also stinks. All right, Phil Bork on tomorrow's show talking hockey. And in the after show tomorrow, the suit on digital media.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.